The reading's taken from Judges 17 and 18, and that's on page 260 of the Church Bibles. That's Judges 17 and 18 on page 260. There was a man of the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, "The 1,100 of pieces of silver that were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse, and also spoke it in my ears, behold, the silver is with me, I took it." And his mother said, "Blessed be my son by the Lord." And he restored the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother. And his mother said, "I dedicate the silver to the Lord from my hand for my son, to make a carved image and a metal image. Now, therefore, I will restore it to you." So when he restored the money to his mother took 200 pieces of silver and gave it to the silversmith, who made it into a carved image and a metal image, and it was in the house of Micah. And the man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and household gods, and ordained one of his sons who became his priest. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now there was a young man of Bethlehem in Judah, of the family of Judah, who was a Levite, and he sojourned there. And the man departed from the town of Bethlehem in Judah to sojourn where he could find a place. And as he journeyed, he came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah. And Micah said to him, "Where do you come from?" And he said to him, "I am a Levite of Bethlehem in Judah, and I am going to sojourn where I may find a place." And Micah said to him, "Stay with me, and be to me a father and a priest, and I will give you 10 pieces of silver a year, and a suit of clothes, and your living." And the Levite went in, and the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man became to him like one of his sons. And Micah ordained the Levite, and the young man became his priest, and was in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, "Now I know that the Lord will prosper me, because I have a Levite as priest." In those days there was no king in Israel. And in those days the tribe of the people of Dan was seeking for itself an inheritance to dwell in, for until then no inheritance among the tribes of Israel had fallen to them. So the people of Dan sent 5 able men from the whole number of their tribe, from Zorah and Eshtol, to spy out the land and to explore it. And they said to them, "Go and explore the land." And they came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. When they were by the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young Levite, and they turned aside and said to him, "Who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What is your business here?" And he said to them, "This is how Micah dealt with me. He has hired me, and I have become his priest." And they said to him, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether the journey on which we are setting out will succeed." And the priest said to them, "Go in peace. The journey on which you go is under the eye of the Lord." Then the 5 men departed and came to Laish and saw the people who were there, how they lived in security after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and unsuspecting, lacking nothing that is in the earth and possessing wealth, and how they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone. And when they came to their brothers at Zorah and Eshtol, their brothers said to them, "What do you report?" They said, "Arise and let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And will you do nothing? Do not be slow to go, to enter in and possess the land. As soon as you go, you will come to an unsuspecting people. The land is spacious, for God has given it into your hands, a place where there is no lack of anything that is in the earth." So 600 men of the tribe of Dan, armed with weapons of war, set out from Zorah and Eshtol and went up and encamped at Kiriath Jearim in Judah. On this account, that place is called Mahanadan to this day. Behold, it is west of Kiriath Jearim. And they passed on from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. Then the five men who had gone out to scout out the country of Lesh said to their brothers, "Do you know that in these houses there are an ephod, household gods, a carved image, and a metal image? Now therefore consider what you will do." And they turned aside there and came to the house of the young Levite at the home of Micah and asked him about his welfare. Now the 600 men of the Danites, armed with their weapons of war, stood by the entrance of the gate. And the five men who had gone to scout out the land went up and entered and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. And when these went into Micah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" And they said to him, "Keep quiet, put your hands on your mouth, and come with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be priest to the house of one man, or to be priest to a tribe and clan in Israel?" And the priest's heart was glad. He took the ephod and the household gods and the carved image and went along with the people. So they turned and departed, putting the little ones and the livestock and the goods in front of them. When they had gone a distance from the home of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house were called out, and they overtook the people of Dan. And they shouted to the people of Dan, who turned round and said to Micah, "What's the matter with you that you come with such a company?" And he said, "You take my gods that I made and the priest and go away, and what have I left? How then do you ask me, 'What is the matter with you?'" And the people of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows fall upon you and you lose your life along with the lives of your household." Then the people of Dan went their way. And when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his home. But the people of Dan took what Micah had made, and the priest who belonged to him, and they came to Laish, to a people quiet and unsuspecting, and struck them with the edge of the sword, and burned the city with fire. And there was no deliverer, because it was far from Sidon, and they had no dealings with anyone. It was in the valley that belongs to Beth-Rehob. Then they rebuilt the city and lived in it, and they named the city Dan after the name of Dan, their ancestor, who was born to Israel. But the name of the city was Laish at the first. And the people of Dan set up the carved image for themselves. And Jonathan, the son of Gershom, son of Moses, and his sons were priests to the tribe of the Danites until the day of the captivity of the land. So they set up Micah's carved image that he made, as long as the house of God was at Shiloh.
Rachel, thank you very much for reading. Please keep that long passage open. And let me ask you, wouldn't it be nice to have God on your side? Wouldn't that be nice to have God on your side so that he sorts out a job and a pay rise and the relationship, so that you get better, maybe, from whatever disease you have, whatever the doctor said you've got, kind of properly on your side. Everything you think you want, when you want it. Wouldn't it be nice to have God on your side, not restricted to his rules all the time? Maybe God could be open to some of your ideas, and that would be nice. Could bless some of your plans for a change. In our passage, we meet a man who reckons he has done what it takes to get God on his side. The last verse of chapter 17. Then Micah said, "Now I know that the Lord will prosper me, because I have a Levite as a priest. Now I know the Lord will prosper me." And in chapter 18, you have an entire tribe doing exactly the same thing. And we're going to follow the story through both chapters. And just be aware, we are in the weird badlands of the end of the book of Judges. I said last week we would have 2 weeks of seeing what happens when people do whatever they want. Seeing what happens if none of God's prophets or judges do anything to hold the people back. And they do some properly weird things and terrible things and tragic things. Actually, for next week, it would really help if you could read chapters 19 to 21. Through before you come, because you will not believe me that it actually happens and is the Bible. if you don't. Don't read them now. That makes them sound interesting, doesn't it? Don't read them now. Stay looking at 17 and 18. Come and look with me at a man and a tribe doing what they want. How they get to verse 13, the Lord will prosper me. And just a warning, we're going to spend most of our time on point one, looking through the story. It's going to be one vast point, so don't panic if that takes some time. So once upon a time, there was a man called Micah who loved his mum and stole 3 million quid off her. That's the amount the Philistine lords offered Delilah last week. It's not the contents of her handbag. Did you do that when you were six? Steal some money from your mum? I did that to buy a book called How to Be a Detective. It's good, isn't it? But he doesn't steal the contents of her handbag. Steals the contents of her bank vault. And that tells you we are in the world where everyone does whatever they want. Verse 6. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Same as Samson in the last 2 weeks. You see £3 million, you want it, so you take it. Doesn't matter if it's your mum that you're robbing. And in fact, Micah, he's done that, and he only gives it back because he doesn't want to be cursed. In verse 2, his mum isn't effing and blinding. His mum is calling down a curse from God on the thief. And Micah panics and gives back the cash. And then the mum demonstrates exactly what everyone in our chapters wants God to be like. So she has cursed the thief, and then her son says that he is the thief. So she's cursed her son, but she is on Micah's side, really on Micah's side, properly. So she at once reverses the curse and blesses him. Never mind about the 3 million quid or the theft. What is right in her eyes is her darling son. And these chapters are about how to maybe get God in that place with you. So whatever you'll do, he'll be on your side and bless you. She blesses him, and she puts her cash to work on his behalf. This is like the religious equivalent of the child trust fund. And she makes some gods. And it goes in his shrine, verse 5. And Micah sets up the full fittings, ephod and some more gods, and picks out one of his sons to be ordained priest. How do you think that conversation went? You know, should we have Billy? No, he's a bit too snotty. Should we have Jimmy? He pulls the girl's hair at school. Let's have Bob. He's a good, reliable hand at mucking out the horses. Let's have him. Here you go, Bob. Swoosh. You're a priest. Get in the shrine. So now he's got the full set. And the kicker is that this family genuinely thinks that what they're doing will make God be on their side. Do you see verse 3? I dedicate, she says, the silver to the Lord to make these images. And whenever you see Lord in capital letters like that in the Bible, did you know this? It doesn't just mean it's another word for master or boss or Lord. It means it is God's personal name, the name he told Moses to tell the people to call him, the name Yahweh. The same one who gave Moses the Ten Commandments that include things like don't make idols, don't make statues, don't steal, don't dishonor your mum, things like that. That God. Let's dedicate the silver to Yahweh, and then he will be on our side. But there's more, because Micah lives on the M1, and all sorts of people stop off for a Burger King on their way north, and one of them is a Levite, which means he is from the tribe that was dedicated to God, the tribe that was meant to teach people the Ten Commandments. And it's also the tribe who were to work in the tabernacle. So he shows up, and just you need to know as he arrives that the priests come from the Levites, but only some of them. That's quite important. So all priests are Levites, but not all Levites are priests. And this one is not a priest. But he arrives, and you get the impression in verse 7, verse 8, that he's been wandering around the country looking for a good job. And Micah hears that he's a Levite and offers him a job. It's quite nice. You know, verse 10, stay with me, be to me a father and a priest. You can hear him whispering to his daughter, go and get Bob to get the ephod off and get back in the horses. We've got a proper one now. And this is doing what you want, religion. It's like buying a car on the internet. What size engine would you like? 3 gods or 4? And what sort of interior? Would you like the leather trim? Or would you like the full jewel-encrusted ephod variety? And this month, we have a special discount on genuine Levites to really guarantee that God will be on your side. And the Levite, he is just the same, except that he's a bit more focused, because what he wants out of religion, out of God, is straightforwardly cash. So verse 10, he's offered 10 bits of silver, which is about 27 grand a year, plus all his clothes and all his living expenses. I think that makes him roughly a Church of England bishop, that sort of salary. And with an offer like that, verse 11, he is content. And they have a big ordination, and the Levite moves in, and now we know that the Lord will prosper me because I have a Levite as a priest. What do you think? Religion like this, is God on Micah's side? It is ludicrous, of course, isn't it, really? Because what he actually has is a Levite who is not a priest, ordained in private, right in my eyes, in a ceremony that God never authorized, to operate in a shrine that is not the tabernacle and is, in fact, in direct competition with it, and is a shrine full of idolatrous, sinful statues that he has made out of stolen silver. And he thinks he has done what it takes to get God on his side. But I've put a list on the handout. There's a handout on the back of the notice sheet. A list of the key things that they want from God in this chapter. I think it's very interesting that the things they are trying to get by trying to manipulate God and grab hold of God and make God do what they want, get him on their side, are the things that we want, the things that I want. So the Lord will prosper me is the big one, verse 13. And for the Levite, that just means, verse 10, his silver, his clothes, and a living. But in verse 10, for Micah, it means he wants a father, a guide, I guess, in spiritual things. And if his mum's parenting is anything to go by, we know what sort of guide that will be. One who won't challenge him too hard on anything. One whose basic position is, bless Micah, but give him some sort of nice spiritual advice on the way. It is all about manipulating God so you get the blessing, not the curse. But aren't they what we want? Be prosperous, to be sure that life will bring you good things, blessing, a bit of God insurance, and a father to guide you. Isn't that what most people think religion is all about? There's the man. Let's have a look at the tribe, chapter 18. The tribe of Dan. And they have a problem because they haven't got any land in the promised land. The same tribe as Samson and the same problem as Samson. Too many nasty Philistines in the way. So instead of trusting God and obeying him and fighting them, they decide to look for a new house. And from the beginning, this is all self-made religion. The cross-reference to write on your sheet for later is Numbers chapter 13. In Numbers 13, the 12 tribes, before they go in the promised land, they send out a spy into the promised land to have a look, to come back and tell them what it's like, to prepare them to obey God's words. Our story's a little bit different. They wander all over the land, and of course they stop off at the services on the M1. And while they're in the travel lodge, they recognize, verse 3, the Levites. And when they hear he's a priest now, they know exactly what five religious spies on a mission from God should do. They, verse 5, they ask the priest with the ephod, inquire of God, please, whether the journey on which we're setting out will succeed. There's something else that man-made religion wants. Wants the future. Wants control of the future, knowledge of the future. And the priest does his job, verse 6, and tells them that God is with them. It's all very religious, except, of course, that God had already said exactly which bit of land they should be on. He'd kind of said where the four corners were, and it's a long, long way all the way across the land from where they are now. And he'd promised them help and told them to go there. And never mind that this bit of land they're heading for was promised to someone else and was due for them to live in, because self-determined, self-made religion always gives you the answer that you want. If God is on your side, he always does what you tell him to. So they hear God is with them, and they go back. Well, they have a look, then they go back and report back. And say in verse 7, they say what they've seen. In verse 7, they find everything they'd been unable to find elsewhere. And that's where this chapter turns horrible, doesn't it? This is all about a genocidal war crime, isn't it, this chapter? There's an internet version of, lots of the Bible, actually, but of this particularly that I love. And this little section, Judges 18, is titled The Massacre of the Peaceful Unsuspecting People. The Massacre of the Peaceful Unsuspecting People. It's a satire, and it works because it just tells accurate Bible stories, but with Lego illustrations. Okay, so the little people and the bricks illustrating these stories. And so what you see is you see the Lego men in Laish enjoying their life. Verse 7, they lived in security and were quiet and unsuspecting. And you see Lego men with their sheep and their jobs going about their life. And then you see Lego spies reporting back, verse 10, that there is an unsuspecting people and the land is spacious. And there's just something about those sort of very, very round, cheerful Lego smiles as they say this that makes you think, this is horrible. This is disgusting. The next shot is of verse 27. When these 600 odd men arrive, and we look over the shoulders of the happy, welcoming people of Laish as they look at rows and rows of Lego men armed with swords and shields and helmets. And I don't know if you ever built a massacre out of Lego as a child, but here's how to do it. The guy on the web, he uses the little round clear pieces, red little pieces, and he kind of sticks them all over the Lego men on the floor, and the swords go right in the heart of the men as they get to it. Verse 27. Then there's a picture of a town full of corpses burning to the ground. And the last picture is of the Danites doing what all of us ever did with Lego and building little houses while little white Lego skeletons lie all around them. And it's a satire because it gives the impression that God approves of what they're doing. Just selects out some of the verses and gives the impression God says yes to this, which is, of course, exactly what the people of Dan think. They've made every effort to get God on their side. The spies ask the priest in the shrine with the ephod and the gods. And when the rest of them turn up, verse 11, the heavily armed men, they get to Micah's house and they steal the shrine, the ephod and the gods. They don't actually have to steal the priest. All they have to do is outbid what Micah offered him. And he gets his promotion, verse 19. Come with us and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be priest to the house of one man or to be priest to a tribe and clan in Israel? And the lying, cheating priest's heart was glad. And the tribe of Dan take their new gods with them into the battle and win easily and set up God in their new home. Verse 30. God is on our side. He must be. Look how blessed we are and how prosperous. Which is all very well, isn't it? Except all they've done is defeat some peaceful, unsuspecting people too far away to call for help, verse 28. And except that Micah thought that God was on his side. But things haven't gone quite so well for him, have they? Verse 21 to 26, finish off the sad little story of Micah. You see, if you're going to have a private God, especially if you live on the services on the M1, then you need to sort out your security. Because private gods are not much cop at defending you. So if you want a private god, you need to have a large private army to go with them. And Micah is hiding under the bed when they clean out his shrine. And he calls out his neighbors to go after them. And they overtake the Danites. And Micah shouts out the biblical equivalent of oi, verse 23. And they play dumb. Well, what's the matter with you? And Micah shows us what it is like to think that you have God on your side and then to find out what reality is like. Verse 24, you take my gods that I made and the priest and go away, and what have I left? Controlling God was supposed to give him everything he wanted, but he has nothing left. So whose side is God on? Was he on Micah's side? Was anything Micah did any good for controlling God? Is he now on the Danites' side? Or actually, more than that, is it nice? Is it nice to have God on your side? Is it possible? Is it desirable? Is it acceptable? So we're going to just to ask two questions as our last two points. Point two, self-made religion, is it good? Self-made religion, is it good? And what do you think from the story we've just seen? Do Micah and the Danites, are they good? Do they have a good life? Is the way they put together their religious choices and their beliefs, is it a good thing? Judges 17 and 18 are crystal clear that God does not approve of these people. That's what your man with the Lego has not made clear. This is humanity without any of the restraints that God normally applies. We've seen that in the stories we've gone through, but the key comment is there again and again from the narrator. The references are on your sheet. 17 verse 6 and 18 verse 1 in our chapter, and then it comes again in 19 verse 1 and in the very last verse of the whole book. Four times the narrator says there was no king. And twice he says the consequence of having no king. There was no king, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. This is bad. This is Israel totally out of control. The right response is going to be to long for a king to make it stop. That's where we're going to go next week, is to look ahead to that king. We'll track through from the failure of the judges through to King David, through to King Jesus. But for this week, just look at the sort of religion you get while there is no king. Look at how wrong it is, how much it is not good. You cannot create God or steal God or make God be on your side. That's just stupid when you think about it. It's pretty obvious as the Danites carry off the statues. Micah hasn't created God, not if someone can steal him, which is a bit of a problem in 21st century London, isn't it? Because these chapters are so like us. Do what you like. Religion is the religion of our culture, I think. And in particular, because everyone in our culture is busy doing do-what-you-like religion, we've come to this point of view where our key value on religious affairs will be do whatever works for you. The government, the king in our country, says whatever is right in your eyes with religion. Try a bit of everything if you want to try and get God on your side, and says that is good. That's almost the chief good in our culture, that everybody should be allowed to put God together any way they want and do whatever they can to make him be on their side, which all of it assumes the absence of God, doesn't it? Assumes the absence of a real personal active God like the one we meet in the Bible. Very least, it assumes that God is not in the least bothered how you do religion. Assumes he's not really a person with all the normal dignities and rights we give a person. You know, God said no statues, but I have one of Vishnu and Krishna and Mary and Buddha, so I'm sure that God is on my side. And that's not a person, that's not a God. That's somebody you're making up. But the killer blow in the chapter comes in the last two verses. It tells us this is not a passage about the Hindu temple in Neasden. This is a chapter about the people of Israel. And therefore, it's a chapter about the church. 18, verse 30 and 31, you might be forgiven for thinking it's just two sort of trivial pursuit bits of information. The categories are celebrity and geography. Celebrity, verse 30, the Levite, it turns out, is the grandson of Moses. There's a bit of trivia information. And the geography, verse 31, is that the house of God is at Shiloh the whole time this is going on. And of course, you know your geography. I had to look this up. Where Ephraim is really close to Shiloh, just down the road. Micah lives really, really close. And the Danites wander right past the house of God at Shiloh. See, these are not the hicks in the sticks getting religion wrong. This is the PCC of St. Helens. This is the church leadership. These are the people of God. That's the tragedy. This guy, Jonathan, the Levite, he bounced on Moses' knee as a kid. He probably has Moses' commentaries on the Ten Commandments. Probably has Moses' old robe to wear for special occasions. But even people like that, the third generation from Moses, even people who live really close to Shiloh can go this wrong, this far wrong. Because as human beings, we are so powerfully driven by what we want. That list we made is a list of the things that I want. And if the real God, the true God, will not give me what I want, then I will make a different God who I think will. Our culture has done this, definitely. And many churches have followed, haven't they? Offering ways to manipulate God. You will be prosperous, language of our passage. You can know the future. And various different ways to get God to approve your plans, regardless of what he might have said in the past. I think I do the same thing. Here's something that is about as opposite as it's possible to be. How's this? So if I ever get up in the morning to do a Bible study early in the morning, you'd think the aim of it would be to look into God's word to see what God says so that I can do what he says. But how often do we use things like that, religious, good, Christian things that we do, as a sort of bargaining chip? As a sort of, God, there you go, I've done what it takes to get you on my side. So actually my aim is that he would hear my words and that he would obey me. Isn't that staggering? We create religion, even in Christian ways, Christian language, so that, 17 verse 3, dedicate to the Lord so that Yahweh will like us, the true God, and do what we say. So is it good? No. And third point, does it work? Self-made religion, does it work? And again, what do you think? Do the people in this story, do they get what they want? Does it work out for them? Does God intervene on their behalf? And the tragedy is the one that Micah discovered. Micah tried to control God and discovered that self-made religion always disappoints. You see, God on your side is always going to be God in your pocket. And there are so many problems with that. For a start, that is not the true God. The true God, I promise you, is bigger than your pockets, whatever sort of trousers you wear. But it's also a problem. If I have God in my pocket and you do as well, what happens when we clash? What happens when the Danites turn up and they think they have God in their pocket and you think you have God in your pocket? It sounds so nice, doesn't it, to have God on your side? Nice but not good. And it doesn't work. So much better to have a God who is on his side. Have a God who is always and utterly committed to doing what God wants rather than what I want. A God like the true God who will always act for his own glory. That is so much better, so much less disappointing. It's the only kind of real true God that you ever could have. But also, how amazing to discover that his glory is all about rescuing us. His glory is all about saving and forgiving and redeeming us. See, it's not nice to have a God on my side because I'm not very good at wanting good things. I want things that destroy me. I'm not very good at getting them or keeping them. I'm not very good at making good plans or good rules. His ways are better. See, the true God doesn't approve of all my plans. He challenges them. He says, leave the peaceful, unsuspecting people alone. But his idea is to make me pure and holy, like his son. It is less fun than manipulating God right now would be, but with no fear of disappointment, no fear of everything coming crashing down around me. The real God, look at the list of things on the handout. The real God is a father. Genuinely a father, loving and caring and wanting to look after me. But a father not like Micah's mum, a father who is consistent and moral and willing to tell me off. And God's son, Jesus, is a priest, genuinely, who is able to offer sacrifices, speak on my behalf. And in terms of silver, clothes and a living, that is exactly what were promised in the new creation, not here and now where I would get proud or get greedy or get resentful, but where I will be changed and able to cope with them. That is where the Lord will prosper me. And in terms of the future, we have a God who has told us everything we need to know, what is good for us to know, and not the sort of betting who's going to win tomorrow, sort of knowledge of the future, but where is this world heading in the middle of everything that's going on? And what have I left? Well, with a God like that, we know there is no way that he can ever be taken from me. No 600 well-armed Danites are ever going to show up and take God away. He does not disappoint. God is not on our side in terms of we're not God, we're not in control of him, but he is for us. Do you know Romans 8, verse 31? If God is for us, who can be against us? And that is in a chapter, the chapter really, about suffering in the New Testament. Not a God who jumps when I tell him to, but a God who through everything loves and cares and does what he promises and never disappoints. A God who knows what is best and does it for his glory and for his children. Shall we pray? Father God, forgive us that we translate the things we powerfully want into ways and means we try and manipulate you, try and get you to do things for us, trying to make ourselves feel we have you specially on our side. Father, please would we listen to you instead? Would we listen to your words, to what it says about how you are, to what it says about what we're to do and how we're to know you? And please, Father, would we trust you, the God who is for us on your own terms, who loves us for your glory. Help us to trust and be content and glad in you. Amen.